It's the Locked On Podcast Network. Local experts on the biggest stories.
You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network. Sam Ekstrom, Sage Rosenfels reunited after a week apart. Sage has been out west, tearing up the slopes, I assume. I guess you're back home now. How was the skiing trip?
Skiing was great. Just got some fresh powder. Actually, the day that I arrived on Monday, when I was skiing on Monday, it was snowing pretty much all day. So it was absolutely fantastic. I wish I could ski more. Omaha is not the center of the skiing universe, unfortunately, but a short flight to Colorado can get my addiction in a couple times a year. So I see Minnesota got about 6 inches of snow last night as well, and I'm heading north to the Twin Cities as we speak.
Yeah, Buck Hill might be beckoning down in Burnsville if you need to scratch that itch again. Did you hear about the Olympian in the Super G? The gal, Esther Ledecka, I think her name was, she was a snowboarder by trade, and just for fun, did the Super G and won gold. Did you hear about that?
I know nothing about that. I do know Lindsey Vonn is originally from Minneapolis, correct, or the Minnesota area, and grew up on Buck Hill and some of the small mountains around the Twin Cities.
Correct, yeah. She's kind of gone so celebrity that she doesn't really return back very much, but a lot of people forget that her roots are actually in the Twin Cities down in the Southern Metro. But were your kids skiing as well, or was it a solo trip?
No, solo trip. Went with a buddy from Denver we met out there and went skiing together. And a couple I know from my hometown, they live out there in Avon. So it's very nice to be able to say cheap flight and then free place to stay. And then I actually get some discounted ski passes. It's amazing how much skiing is. Beaver Creek, one day, $199 for a lift ticket.
Wow. I mean, that's the best place in the country to ski. So probably an awesome experience. I'm trying to think of football stuff you missed while you were gone. I think it's the calm before the storm with free agency creeping up on us, the negotiating period about 2 weeks away. There is some stuff happening, though. Marcus Peters got traded, like literally minutes ago. Adam Schefter had the report. Marcus Peters traded to the Los Angeles Rams. And I have the stats here of what he's compiled the last three seasons for the Kansas City Chiefs. It's pretty amazing. He's got 19 interceptions, 5 forced fumbles, 5 fumble recoveries, and 3 defensive touchdowns over 3 years. So this is a pretty big move. And Marcus Peters has had his issues off the field. He's got a very big personality. Seems like the Chiefs just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, this is the time of year that teams start preparing for really free agency and the draft. But free agency is not, a long way here, just about, 3 weeks away. And so teams, I think, are preparing for that. And sometimes that's signing guys to franchises like Jarvis Landry earlier this week. Sometimes that's trades in this situation to either free up salary cap space or just to sort of get rid of maybe a disgruntled player, a player that they don't think fits their football team. So you start to see these moves, and sometimes they're surprising. A lot of times these franchise tag things don't happen until the last day or the last few days as they try to get a long-term extension in. The Jarvis Landry situation was different because they did it on the very first day of the ability to franchise tag somebody, which might mean they may want to try to trade him if they did it really, really early. So the NFL is 12 months out of the year. This is that time of year where sort of more deals get done before free agency in preparation for, trying to put together the right football team, this coming offseason.
And on that Peters trade, too, if the Rams can go out and re-sign LaMarcus Joyner, who's probably their best safety, that's going to be a great secondary. I think it's already a fantastic team. The Rams could be the class of the NFC next year if they stay healthy, because I think they've got a great coach, they've got a great defensive coach in Wade Phillips, and they've got some monsters on that defense. That's a scary team for the future.
Yeah, and Jared Goff, obviously, with a huge jump in the way he progressed from year one to year two. The offense has got some good players. They could probably use a true number one wide receiver. That's something they don't have, though. Not everyone has to have that. I mean, the Patriots, you could say, didn't have really a true number one wide receiver. Really, Gronkowski was their number one wide receiver. So there are some spots on that football team, but that is a loaded roster. Their defense, which has been really one of the best defenses in the league for the last 8 or so years, just got better. It's going to be a really, really tough defense for all those NFC West teams like San Francisco and Seattle and Arizona to compete against with next year.
So you mentioned the period of time where the franchise tags are getting sorted out. You know, there's also the transition tag, which we talk much less about, but it's where a team, you know, offers basically a one-year tender, and then other teams can make offer sheets, and then the team can match them. They have the right of first refusal. I've heard people maybe whispering that the transition tag would make sense for Case Keenum. I think it would be like a one-year, $18 million tender to make that offer. Does that make any sense to you to not give the franchise, but to give the second biggest thing, the transition tag?
Yeah, you know, I think whatever they feel will secure his rights for next year would be the best way to go. If they think that somebody might come and snag him away by basically under tendering him, if that's a phrase, or under franchising him, I think that would be a poor move. If they want him to be the quarterback next year, I think it's worth the extra, about $23.6 million I read for a franchise tag. It's obviously less for the transition tag. But if you're worried you might lose them, I think that would be a mistake. And so I think actually the franchise tag situation for Case Keenum is exactly what it's meant for. I mean, he had a really, really good year. But every NFL franchise, most importantly the Vikings, wants to know, I mean, can he do this year to year? Can he have a 95-plus quarterback rating for 4 or 5 years in a row? And right now we just know he can do that for 1 year. And so if he can do that next year, yeah, he's going to get a huge contract, after that, because he's now proved it 2 years in a row that he can be a really, really good NFL quarterback. But right now we've just seen one good season out of Case Keenum.
Sure. And with the transition tag, too, you're sort of sending the message saying, hey, we don't really want to commit to you. We're sort of hedging our bets. And I don't know if that's the best message that you want to send to a guy who might end up being your quarterback.
For an extra $5 million, I think it's worth it. And I don't think, I think a franchise tag is like 2 first-rounders, and a transition tag is maybe a 1 first-rounder. I'm not sure the exact numbers on that as far as what a team would have to give up to come and take him from you. But, I just don't think a team is going to give up more than maybe a 2nd-rounder for Case Keenum if somehow they were offering him in a trade.
Here's a question for you. So the NFL Combine is next week, Feb 27, goes into early March, and then free agency starts. Do you get the feeling that teams like to scout out the Combine before they really solidify their offseason plan? Because you have to make decisions on whether or not you're going to attack areas of need through the draft or through free agency, and the Combine, it can sort of be a differentiator there. Do you think that is sort of the start of the cycle where teams decide, okay, instead of going after the running back in free agency, we'll attack it in the draft? Do you think this is where it all begins?
Yeah, well, I think the Senior Bowl is really the beginning of it, and that has really turned into more of like a convention for coaches and administrative type people. But, the Combine, from what I hear and from what this is what I've heard general managers and people like that talk about, is it's really not about somebody just blowing you away with, physically what they do. All the coaches, you're the tight ends coach of the Vikings, you're watching all the tight ends that are going to be at the Combine and even those who aren't going to be at the Combine. So you know how they play. You know how they move. What the Combine does is it affirms or really disaffirms, some of your thoughts when you're watching them. Man, he looks fast. How fast is he? This player looks sort of slow, but he's 6'5". I wonder what he'll run at the Combine. Yeah, he ran 4.7. He is slow. So I think it's really trying to confirm, what people are seeing on film. I think the film and what people, what the players have played in their seasons in last fall are the most important thing. And I think that the combine just sort of confirms what, you know, from the numbers and all those things that people have already studied on tape.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's not gospel. Like, I don't think any GM should rely solely on numbers because there has to be an element of eye test. But you know, sometimes it can kind of help, I think, analysts affirm decisions or criticize decisions, like Laquon Treadwell, for instance. Everybody saw the slow 40 time at the combine, and that's sort of become fodder for, well, you should have known that he was going to be not effective all along because of his 40 time. I don't think it boils down to exactly that, though. I think there's more to it than just he's not very fast, and I think that goes with any position. You can't just boil it down to numbers. That's part of it, but that's not all of it.
Yeah, and like, we know, is he getting separation? I mean, Jerry Rice supposedly ran a 4.65 at the combine, too. Wes Welker wasn't fast. You know, a lot of these players are not combine heroes. I think what people don't realize, people think the combine is about the workouts. I think the workouts are actually maybe 30% of the combine for these coaches. The interviews, that's the most important time. This is where you get pretty much all the top players and the position coaches and coordinators and head coaches get to interview any player they want and sit down for 10, 15, 20 minutes and have a real conversation with these guys. They learn a heck of a lot more from that, you know, than they do from just what their 40 time is or, you know, how they move in some sort of linebacker drill. I think what we see is this sort of celebration and showcase of all the drills, but it's interviews behind in the back. And the whole origination of the combine actually was to see if players were healthy. It all started because players were being flown around all over the place to have an MRI done on their knee or an X-ray done on this or an MRI done on this. And it was just exhausting for the players who'd have, you know, 10 different teams flying them all over just to see their doctors. And I believe it started off with 8 teams coming together and basically sharing all the same information of having the same doctors do those MRI tests and X-ray tests and those types of things. And then when they had them there, they said, hey, well, for here, we might as well have them do some drills. And then it turned into some drill work, and then next thing you know, it turned into the combine. So the origination actually was for to check out those injuries, which almost all these college players have some sort of injuries, and those interviews are as, if not more important than actually just the workouts and the 40 times.
Yeah, there's a lot of X's and O's there for sure. Well, I've got your combine results in front of me on the computer. Should we go into this? Do you remember them?
I of course remember them. I can tell you, I weighed 228.
Yep.
All right, and just so you know, I never weighed over 220 in preparation for the combine. The morning right before the right before the weigh-in, I drank a gallon of water. If you don't know, a gallon of water weighs 8 pounds. So I basically put on 8 pounds right before the weigh-in, knowing I'd be peeing out the rest of the day because I didn't have to work out until the next day. So I gained 8 pounds, so I weighed 220. I didn't want to be a 6'4" skinny kid. I believe I was 6'4 3/8".
They've got it in inches. It says 76.4 inches, so that would be 6'4", and I don't know what the 0.4 translates to in inches.
Yeah, yes, almost, well, about 3/8, yeah, something around there. And then I don't know my hand size. I think I ran a 4.75 or a 4.72. I'm not quite
4.77 is what it shows.
4.77. Oh no! Well, I've been telling people 4.75. I think at my college. Maybe not. I don't remember. I thought I ran a 4.72 somewhere, but either way, I'll take anything under 4.8. I'm pretty happy with at 228.
Yeah, carrying that 8 pounds of water, chugging down the 40.
I'm trying to think what else. What else was?
How about Wunderlich?
Wunderlich score 32.
What's the Wunderlich like? I think I've taken maybe like a sample Wunderlich in the past just for fun, but I can't really remember what it was about.
The Wunderlich, we walked into some sort of like, you know, classroom type deal. There's a whole bunch of desks and you sit down, you know, they hand out these tests. You have to have it, you know, turned over to the wrong or whatever. It's a booklet or something. And then they, you know, say, open it up and you got 12 minutes and it's 50 questions. And some of the questions are very easy. You know, what's the 9th month of the year? Well, for some guys, they're going to have to go January, February, March, April, May, and go through the whole thing. And for other people, they just jump right to it, right? So
yeah.
I think it's all about, you know, how many questions you can answer in seconds, and every second is valuable. So some of the questions are very easy. Some of the questions do take some thought and almost some basic math or things like that to figure out. But nothing, I think, is like just mind-boggling, you know, SAT type of challenging questions.
Sure. I've got your broad jump and your three cone drill. I don't really know what's, you know, is good or is
what's
supposed
good.
To be good.
Broad jump, 9'7".
Let's see. It's 107 inches, so that would be 9'11".
9'11". Oh, almost got to 10 feet is sort of like there's a 10-foot thing where it's like, yeah, 10 foot's a really good jump. I've seen some receivers get to 12 feet. Some of the really, really good athletes get almost to 12 feet. That's a huge jump, but you know, a lot of times linemen will be in that 8-foot mark, maybe even 9-foot. Everything is sort of based off of big guys, middle-sized guys, which would be your quarterbacks, your tight ends, your linebackers, maybe your running backs are sort of the mid-size, and then you have your sort of speed categories, which are some tailbacks, receivers, and DBs.
So were you happy with your combine?
Yeah, I was really happy for it. I trained incredibly hard for it. I was very happy with the numbers that I put up, though I thought I put up better than a 4.77. But, I was happy with it, and I was very happy with the interviews. As I said, I think that's – I probably did interviews of 20 different teams that week, and I thought that was and not only that, is you get to meet all the quarterbacks, coaches around the league, which is sort of neat. So, you know, once you make the NFL and you play a game after the game, a lot of times those quarterbacks coach will walk up to you, and, you know, last spring you had a 20 or 30-minute conversation. You feel like you know each other. So it sort of it's a nice way to get to know a lot of the coaches around the league, because you know, you don't play for one NFL team necessarily, you play for all 32. So even when you play on one team, you gotta know that you still want to impress all the coaches on the other teams too.
So you were drafted in 2001, right?
2001, 109th pick, so fourth round. I'm not sure about the 10th pick of the fourth round or something like that.
So you were in the Vic. What other QBs were drafted that year?
It went Vic, Drew Brees.
Okay.
Was the first pick of the second round. That draft, the San Diego Chargers got Drew Brees and LaDainian Tomlinson. An absolutely phenomenal draft. Then after that, it was Quincy Carter and Marquise Tuiasosopo were second rounders.
Yeah,
we had no third rounders, and Chris Winkie was early fourth round. I was right after him, and then the great Jesse Palmer,
Bachelor,
was drafted about three or four picks after me.
The Bachelor, Jesse Palmer, right?
The Bachelor and the Daily Mail host of your get all your gossip needs for television.
Is that what he's doing? Oh, yeah. Man. So that's crazy. Like, you were the sixth quarterback taken. That was the fourth round. This year, they're talking about four quarterbacks in the first 12 picks. They might have six in the first round alone. That's crazy.
Yeah. And, interesting, like A.J. Feely, he was drafted in the fifth round. He wasn't even invited to the combine. He was Joey Harrington's backup at Oregon, played a lot his junior year, and then got hurt. And then Joey Harrington came in, and then, of course, Joey played when A.J. was a senior. He wasn't even taken to the combine, and he was drafted in the fifth round. He had a long career. Josh Heupel, I think, won the Maxwell Trophy my senior year in 2000. He was a sixth-round draft pick, never even made out of training camp. Was cut by the Miami Dolphins. It's interesting how the draft works, and quarterbacks just seem to be hit or miss. Either they don't make it at all, or they last for 10 years. It's sort of one or the other. With NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah, that is interesting. Last one of the day, speaking of quarterbacks, the Vikings brought in another coach while you were gone, Todd Downing, former OC with the Oakland Raiders. Presumably he's going to help with the passing game. He mentored Derek Carr pretty well. It kind of seems like the Vikings are taking a page from the Eagles book with surrounding their offense with quarterback experts, DeFilippo, Stefanski, and now Downing. Do you think there's definitely some merit to that? And do you think that's sort of the intention is to really surround this quarterback with a cocoon of great minds?
I think you can never have too many sort of passing game quarterback gurus on your roster unless it's one of those deals where you have too many chefs in the kitchen. But if they all get along well, and I know Stefanski will work with anybody. I think you can never have too many minds. Creativity is really important in the passing game. That can take an average quarterback and make him a really good quarterback, take a good quarterback and make him great as a really creative offensive mind. And if you got, three good ones, which I think the Vikings now have. I think that's an advantage. You know, I look at, the Dallas Cowboys, you know, Jason Garrett, former quarterback. Scott Linehan played quarterback in college. Wade Wilson, you know, who was their quarterback coach, played 19 years in the NFL. Now they just hired the kid out of Boise, who was a quarterback for them as their quarterback's coach. And I think that's what helps, you know, Dak Prescott become a good player. I think the same thing with the Philadelphia Eagles. They had three former quarterbacks, the head coach, Peterson, Frank Reich, and Filippo was, I believe, a college quarterback, all in that quarterback room. And sure enough, they're, you know, whether it's Carson Wentz or Nick Foles had great seasons. So, yeah, I think it's hugely important if you want to have your quarterback have a lot of production, have guys that play that position for a long time in that room, and the more the merrier.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what they really have Downing doing. Hopefully we get a chance to ask some of those questions at the next availability with Mike Zimmer and John DeFilippo. Sage, have a great trip. I know you're coming up to the cities. Hopefully you don't get snowed in. I think we're going to get a blizzard tomorrow, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds great.
All right, he's Sage Rosenfels on Twitter, at Sage Rosenfels 18. My name's Sam Ekstrom on Twitter, at Sam Ekstrom. The website, LockedOnVikings.com. Of course, on iTunes as well. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Reunited.